Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseur. Tonight we'll be talking about the comic books we think will make great television series and our own individual pitches for them. First, I'm my co-host, JAT from Saskatoon.
We're gonna make so much money.
Also with us is Red Ink.
How are you?
Very good.
Just fine, thank you. All right, so let's get this started with solicitations, as we always do. Okay, so Archie's dead.
Yep.
He looked at both Betty and Veronica at the same time and said, "I've always loved you."
Now, excuse me.
Hey,
I'm sorry, I read that issue when I was at the store, and it's like everyone, a lot of my people I know online at the store, a lot of people are losing their collectorship. You can't kill Archie. They're not killing Archie. This is a future Archie. It's totally cool if they kill him, because it hasn't happened yet. And I said that to one guy who apparently is a physics major at the university, and he tried to educate me on quantum string theory.
this is like the trial of a Barry Allen all over again.
Basically. I don't know. The only Archie comic I'm reading with any regularity is the occasional double digest that I pick up at the supermarket, so.
Next comic will be Reign of the Archies.
Oh, Jesus.
Four brand new Archies. Cyborg Archie, Badass Archie, Black
Black.
Archie,
Yeah,
Black
Black
Archie,
Archie. And then
Teenage Archie.
they'll bring back the new Archie Archies, or new Archies Archie, just so they can have that, because, well, Superboy was a product of the 90s, and what Archie was a more a product of the 90s than Mullet Archie.
Let's move on. We
All right.
have again some other things here. It's we're gonna skip through some of this stuff because we always say the same stuff here. So I don't
Blah,
see
blah,
anything
blah.
really interesting from Big Finish. Always does the audio stuff for Doctor Who. Boom Studio always does Adventure Time and Clive Barker's stuff, which is like night and day.
Yeah. I did pick up my from Burly Man Entertainment, the comic company started by the Wachowski brother and sister. I
The
picked up Doc.
Wachowski siblings.
Yes. I picked up Doc Frankenstein, The Messiah of Science Resurrected trade paperback, which if you were ever raised in any sort of Christian religion growing up, and when you get to like issue 5 and you see the origin of God, you will laugh hysterically, not because you think it's so ridiculous and over the top that it's funny, it's that you are in fear for your mortal soul. That and the fact that the tagline on one of the original comics, because I think I still have the first couple issues of this when it came out, the tagline was, "They don't fear him because he's a monster. They fear him because he's a liberal." Next comic organization we got here, Dark Horse.
Let's see here. We got
I
Brian
missed out
Dallas
on.
Doors Open at Midnight. I know you'll pick that one up.
I have got that on order, and I missed out on that. What is it? The new issue of that Darth Maul mini. I've been grabbing that just to feed that Star Wars monkey on my back.
Yeah, but as soon as Uncle Owen shows up.
Just pray he doesn't have a space shotgun in the rack on the back of his land speeder.
All right, the Usagi Yojimbo always worth picking up. Let's see here, DC Comics. Moving on, we have Dynamite Entertainment with Ash Gets Hitched, number one of Army of Darkness. What's this?
This is the they had the Ash versus the Army of Darkness miniseries that preceded this. This is the sequel series, because this is something they've done with Army of Darkness since like the early aughts when Dynamite first got a hold of the license, is they don't do it as an ongoing, they do it as an ongoing series of mini series.
Ah.
So it and it works a lot better because you can, as much as we all love the concept and the chin that could kill, can't exactly carry a long running ongoing series, so it makes a lot more sense to do it in short little bursts like this.
Yes.
So I haven't picked this one up yet because I'd neglected to order it in and they were sold out when I got to the store. Damn it! And, well, got my legendary steampunk adventure, which is, you know, guys like Captain Victory and the Phantom and the $6,000 Man. And it's basically a world where it's all steampunk and science fiction and action adventure. And, you know, there's Vampirella runs a nightclub in the city, and there's a steampunk version of the Green Hornet in Kato. And it's actually been a lot of fun, although I saw in an ad for the previous issue to this, they're coming out with a Battlestar Galactica steampunk-inspired miniseries.
Fracking Cylon!
Yeah, they turned... the Cylon looks like 9 feet tall and 8 feet wide, as a steampunk robot should look. And the... What's it? Was it Muffy? Like, the Daggett dog is now like some sort of dogman cyborg-looking thing.
Let's Why not? On.
Yeah.
We got
IDW.
IDW with some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with Keith Eastman.
Yeah,
doing a cover, variant cover. We got.
I'd like to get that Nick Starenko, Nick Fury hardcover there. That would be pretty sweet.
That's interesting that IDW is publishing old Marvel art.
Well, a lot of it, I think, a lot of that stuff is like black and white. Pencil sketch sort of stuff like
that's
that.
The most beautiful stuff to get, especially from Starenko.
Yeah.
Image Comics, we got Captain Dinosaur.
I'm definitely going to have to grab that just because the title alone.
Dino Sense Tingling.
Yeah. New Rat Queens is out, and that, if have you, either of you guys read that one?
Nope. The thing is, not really, because it's... Because Rat Queen reminds me of a Rat King. Have you ever seen a Rat King before?
No.
Okay. Google Rat King in Google Images.
Like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle villain?
No.
Or folklore.
Folklore.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, that has absolutely no bearing on the Rat Queen's comic book, though. The basic premise is it's set in a Dungeons and Dragons type fantasy world where there's this team of, it's a all-female team of sword and sorcery style adventurers, and their name just happens to be the Rat Queens. And there's another team named the Five Dougs because it's five guys named Doug. And it's written with a very kind of an anachronistic sort of like, it's all straight up sword and sorcery. There's no science or anything, but there's a lot of, there's like a lot of little anachronistic touches, like stuff they drink and the language they use. It's just a lot. It's kind of a tongue in cheek sword and sorcery thing. If you enjoy that sort of thing, I would highly recommend it. Mm. I've actually met the creator. He's originally from Saskatoon here. So, and yet another person, somebody I have to put on the list, Ben, don't worry. All right, so moving on, we go to Marvel. We got more of these 100th anniversary specials, which have absolutely no bearing on any of the stories currently on going on in any of the regular series, so we can forget those.
Yes.
We got the new... Oh, my God. Okay, it's Captain America. It's the poster. And we all heard the news this week. Captain America is following the Punisher suit and becoming a black man.
Yes.
And Thor is now a Disney princess.
This isn't the first time Thor was a woman.
When was Thor a woman before?
Earth X.
Okay, but I mean in regular continuity. But Lord knows if this lasts longer than Dr. Octopus masquerading as Peter Parker, I'll be pretty friggin' surprised. Let's see what else we got in Marvel's. Ooh. You know what? If I had the money, I would have a complete collection of the Marvel Masterworks hardcovers. Mm-hmm. That would be a lot of fun to have. Let's see. More Original Sin. Although, actually, I had a friend of mine ask me if he wants to get in on Original Sin. Does he need to collect any of the spinoffs? As like, there's only one that I would recommend outside of the ongoing, and that's Original Sin Hulk versus Iron Man. But that's the only one I really have any interest in collecting outside of the core miniseries.
I see. Well, let's move further on. We got, let's see.
You're not reading She-Hulk?
I like the story, but the art is just not what I want from a She-Hulk title.
It's not the art I can get behind, The only nitpick I have on that is everyone else, like, despite the very stark nature of the guy's art, I can't remember his name right now, She-Hulk is the only one who, when she her eyes are just open, she's looking at somebody, she's just got this dead, blank stare. And that's it doesn't matter if there's any sort of emotion inferred in her dialogue, she's just got this dead, blank, I'm watching the paint dry because it pleases me.
Like, is this that the kind artist of... that did the X-23 series?
I don't think so. I'm just looking here on the, was it... Crap. Yeah, it's just, he's got his, I forget the names are. At first I mistook him for Marcos Martin, who's got this very, almost Ditko sort of inspired, like very simple, like detailed, but not overly so kind of simplistic art like Ditko had. Ah, it's going to bug me. I'll figure it out later.
Good. Well, let's, we got,
after that, what else do we have?
Well, let's move on to other titles. Let's talk about, let's see here. You know, honestly, we pretty much breezed through the solicitations this week. I think we should, we usually try to keep it underneath 10 to 15 minutes. But this time we actually breezed through a lot faster than I expected, which is always a bonus in my opinion, you know. But so, we'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good grief.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DASIEN.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we are back to talk about the theoretical TV shows we think should be made out of our favorite comics. And since I am the hostess with the mostess... Well, the host of the most, or whatever. I don't know. I was kind of. Anyway, let's continue with my picks. First pick I have is an alternate pitch for Young Justice.
Now, are you going with a live action or animated pitch?
Anime. This is the only animated pitch I have in my list.
Okay.
The thing is, a lot of what the Weissman series, how it started, was very similar to how I had this in mind. Basically, I had in my mind for some reason or another, Robin teams up with, in my pitch, Impulse. And they break into Cadmus and break out an immature Superman clone. Which would be that Superboy. And like I said, the Weissman series started very similarly. And I basically, my vision of an animated Young Justice would be a bit more lighthearted and not so heavy on trying to build an agenda. I haven't seen the Weissman series all the way through, but it tried really hard to immediately start this weaving net of of a conspiracy and some shadowy something or other. And I think that's sort of where it fell apart, honestly. I mean, it's not to say that a long game in animation is a bad thing, but, you know, it sort of hinders more than it helps when you start writing towards that, especially when you start writing early. I mean, the good example of this is the original Justice League animated program did not play a long game with itself until it started doing JLU. And the first two seasons I found far more watchable than most of JLU. And I think playing to the strengths of here's some bunch of fun characters, have them play along together, you know, in an animated form, of course, would be where my proposed theoretical alternate Young Justice series would have been fun. Okay, thoughts, guys?
So, basically, you just get rid of the mysterious conspiracy, just straight out have it be Legion of Doom?
Why even have any sort of, you know, interconnection episode to episode like that, at least to start off with? You know, the thing is...
So build the universe first.
Yeah, well, the thing is, just you're supposed to, like, get people comfortable with it. And the thing is this, first couple episodes of the Weisman Young Justice series introduced lots of concepts rapid fire. Boom, 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 boom. It didn't let you really absorb. Like, you know, someone who's unfamiliar with a lot of these characters would be like, okay, they just threw, like, 30 characters in my face, and I'm only in episode 3. What's going on?
No, I get that.
And like I said, that was sort of the strength of what Bruce Timm and Paul Dini did with the original Justice League cartoon, was they sort of eased you into the bath of the more larger, immersive DC universe versus, oh, here's 30 characters.
Yeah, kind of like how they opened the end of the second episode where you get, like, the entire Justice League coming down from the sky like that.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it's the rapid-fireness that sort of kills it for me. And I get the whole, oh, look, it's my favorite character in animated form. Squee, I get it. And I enjoy that too myself. But at the same time, it's sort of prohibitive to people who could get into it. I mean, you know, I keep going back to the earlier series Bruce Timm did. But, you know, Batman the Animated Series got people interested in Batman as a whole, because it was a lot more of an easing point. And I sort of hate myself because this sort of goes into Quesadilla's bullshit, every issue is someone's first issue. And I disagree with that on a very large point, but at the same time, you know, in an animated format, in a different format, you have to ease into the bath.
You can't just jump in.
Yeah, because imagine if a Batman movie started with Batman talking to Zatanna and then going to see Ra's al Ghul and then stopping by to have a chat with an elongated man. Not exactly an impossible event in a modern comic book issue of Batman. That could happen in a modern issue of Batman, have him meet those three characters. But if you start a Batman movie that way, I mean, damn, you lost the plot.
Well, I have to disagree with you. Myself, I love continuity. So
I love it too,
having the whole story, everything, all the episodes link up in the end, to me, that was awesome. I love that. The other thing is, the show wasn't written for anybody to watch. It was written for fans. Literally written for fans of the DC comics. So that's why they just shoved whatever the fuck they felt like in there, because they're expecting you to be a fan to watch this show. Now, it might have been its failure, but it was also one of the best points about it that I liked.
I would argue that its biggest failure in the series was the 5-year gap between seasons.
Yeah, I didn't really like that either.
It's like, I get that. You know, it's interesting from a certain standpoint, like, you know, to And they do fill in some of the history here and there, but it's just by the end of that first season, I was so invested with a lot of the story and the characters, you know, just kind of sort of wanted to scream betrayal that, you know, they jumped ahead like that. So,
like I said, it's, you know, to me, what I would like is something that focused on the 3 to 6 characters that are there versus info dump. You know, but let's move on to another one of my choices for live action, Challengers of the Unknown.
Oh, I love
Challengers of the Unknown. Challengers of the Unknown is like one of my favorite adventure teams in both universes.
Created by Kirby.
Of course, created by Kirby. And I just think that having a live action of Challengers of the Unknown series, I mean, you don't even need that much of a budget. I mean, I can see it right now. It'd be part Twilight Zone, part Mission Impossible.
And it's one of those series, like, the you don't even have to really come up and, like, alter the pitch of the story. Because, I mean, for those that don't know, the Challengers are 4 guys that survived a plane crash for whatever reason, virtually unscathed, and they're living on borrowed time. You know, it's like watching the first Highlander movie. You don't need to know how the immortality works. Just go with it. And it's just them, like, becoming, like, these adventurers and no superpowers except, you know, their will and determination. I mean, that's why I love the Challengers so much, like, that story. I mean, there's, like, when they revamped the Chals in the 90s, post-Zero Hours, this more of an X-Files-inspired team, that series was great. I mean, it was a worthy follow-up, but, you know, then they went and explained how the living on borrowed time works and, well, and readers have banded that title faster than people got off the Titanic. So,
like I said, if I had to pick, I'd say, you know, make it like Twilight Zone meets what did I say again? Twilight Zone meets
Indiana Jones. There.
Yeah, that works. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to ask you. So we got Prof, Ace, Red, and Rocky. Who would you cast for, or who would be some of your picks to potentially fill those roles?
That'd be hard. I'd say almost try to find unknowns for all 4 of them. Because the thing is, Challengers is such a long shot. Make it a real long shot. Go with unknowns. Go True. Into the unknown.
Now, if as you're pitching this, would you scale back some of the more grandiose elements, or would you have them like headquarters in Challengers Mountain?
I'd scale it back a little bit. I'll do something that's a little more X-Filesy, like they have like an office in New York or something, and they go out and they like I said, you know, they go out and, you know, a little X-Files, a little Twilight Zone, a little Outer Limits.
Maybe build towards the Challengers Mountain.
Yes.
Something like that. Because, I mean, and for those that, if anyone's listening has ever read Who's Who, know that I loved reading the Who's Who title as a kid, and I always loved, my favorite issues are the ones where they had, like, the cutaway diagrams of, like, Challengers Mountain or this Justice League satellite or the Batcave. And Challengers Mountain, I just always thought that was, like, one of the coolest things, that they've got, you know, this headquarters built. They basically got, like, tons of natural armor. They don't really have to worry about, you know, having panels slide down over windows or anything like that, which is, again, one of my favorite things about the Justice League cartoon, how they went back to the original Secret Sanctuary with Mount Justice in that. So, I don't know, what do you think of the Challengers, Red?
Myself, I'm not really familiar with them.
Ah.
Well, that's okay, because you're familiar with the next one. I would totally do a show about Nightwing. I would pitch it as using the Dixon run, you know, Dick Grayson on his own as Nightwing, Bloodhaven, you know, in the police academy, you know, and, you know, he has the apartment, he has the landlady that has a crush on him, all that stuff.
Got amygdala living in the basement.
Yeah.
The thing is, did we talk about this before? Because
talked about Nightwing before. I think it was on when we were talking about favorite runs or something like that.
Yeah. Because this is pretty much exactly, like, I also said that I wanted to pitch Nightwing too. So,
okay. Okay.
But this is pretty much exactly the same idea I had.
Awesome.
You could easily do it by not even mentioning Batman. You could just fucking have him live his life, get phone calls from Barbara, shit like that. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to mention Bruce or anything. None of that bullshit where they have to cross over into the movies and pay big giant prices.
Yeah, and also avoid any future bat embargoes.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's... Are you saying, like, just completely divorce him from the Bat universe, or just never mention
him?
Just never mention it.
Just don't mention it.
You can clue into it once in a while. Oh, I got a phone call from Alfred the other day, and he's wondering what I was up to.
Or Alfred sent me a birthday card.
Yeah.
Actually, because when you talk about him, would you go with him entering the police academy from the start, or would you actually follow the Dixon run? Say you're show running, would you actually follow the Dixon and have him like arrive and kind of build up and kind of maybe end the first season with him getting that application?
I would start with him already joining the police academy, because I think one thing that would be great would be showing Nightwing show up, you know, NITE wing.
Tad. Actually, you know what? I would say this, or one quick question before I mention a character I would definitely love to see in this show. Would he already be operating as Nightwing, or is it like he's arrived and he's joining the police academy? And
I think he's already been established as Nightwing, but he's establishing Nightwing in Bloodhaven.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he's already been out and about as, you know, the...
Like, he's already been Robin. He's already been part of the Teen Titans.
Yeah, and he's already been Nightwing... operating.
He's already been rocking Viva.
Okay, all right. But the one character, you know, we definitely have to have in the show, Torque.
Oh God! Just
from a costuming special effects perspective,
Out of all of Nightwing's Rogues Gallery during the Dixon run, he was the most Dick Tracy of all the villains.
Oh yeah.
Myself, there's one villain, or one character I put in there that I know Ben would hate, but I want to see.
Blockbuster?
No.
Thank God.
The Red Hood. If done right, yeah.
Because
it's basically Jason being an evil Nightwing. He's not calling himself Nightwing, but he's pretty much being the fucking Punisher, and... He's got to take him down.
They did do that in the original Nightwing run towards the end. They had a few issues where he came to New York and was basically dicking around with Dick's life. But just have him as like Nightwing as the good vigilante and Red Hood as the murderous vigilante.
So who is Nightwing, NITE?
Well, more murderous vigilante, shall we say. Because, I mean, when you look at, like, Nightwing, like, Tad, let's just call him Tad.
The funny thing is, when I was reading the Dixon run, I described NITE Wing to my old mentor, and he said to me, he doesn't feel like he's such a bad guy, because he says to me, you know, a guy beats up a drug dealer and steals the drug dealer's money, I'm not going to cry about it, is basically how he said it to me. It's like, that might be an interesting perspective to bring in. You know, how would the public feel about some vigilante that's just some poor kid running around beating up drug dealers and stealing their money?
Yeah. And lady villains, you could definitely bring in Double Dare, which were the sexy French aerialist twins, or Lady Vic, which would definitely work.
The Tarantula?
No, Tarantula.
Not unless they're putting this series on, like, Showtime, because then that would make sense in a Showtime series. And you know what? You don't even have to have that many supervillains. You just have them fighting, like, street-level crime, and then you kind of build towards him being such a thorn in Blockbuster side, if you keep that aspect of the Dixon run, that he starts bringing in more and more of these colorful rogues to deal with Nightwing. I could definitely see that.
That's an interesting perspective I like.
And you know what? And this is just me. if this ever came to actually happen, live action Nightwing and Supernatural is over, you get Jensen Ackles to play the Red Hood. Because I loved his voice work on Batman, the Red Hood, the animated film. He would be perfect for a live action Jason Todd.
It's a little old these days, though.
Well, the being rotting in the ground does things too. But let me bring up my last live action pitch. I would totally love to see a Mandrake series.
And who, pray tell, is Mandrake, Ben? Please, educate us.
One of the first modern, quote, superheroes. The idea is a Mandrake, you know, of King's Entertainment was one of the first published serial heroes that had actual powers, being his magic. And Mandrake's magic powers mostly were just illusion-based, but still, he was a rather formidable magician and a very interesting character. You know, he showed up in the animated Defenders of the Earth, and I think it'd be interesting
Defenders.
To do... Yes. And I think it'd be interesting to do a show like that, because it'd be like, here's this guy who uses, you know, magic and, you know, dressed like a stage magician fighting crime, and... I just dig shows like that. You know, you have, because it's almost like this grandiose image of a guy in a tuxedo and a top hat and he's fighting crime. I mean, I love that kind of thing. And I love the whole idea of, oh, he's a stage magician too, and all that sort of stuff. I love the idea of like a public, you know, performs in Vegas kind of superhero. Thoughts, guys?
I think I'm going to say this first. Any concept we come up with would have to be better than the purported live-action film starring Hayden Christensen. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Hayden Christensen is a very good actor. I just don't need to see an emo Mandrake crying about Mommy and Daddy on screen. Just saying. I mean, we went through him and we got episode 3, and it was surprisingly decent compared to the first two. But anyway, I think that would be great, especially if you just go... with, like, just him being, like, this rich Vegas magician who may or may not have actual mystic powers. Because that's certainly something I think they've played with through the years in the comics. Up until, like, the King's Watch miniseries that came out a few months back where he's basically Doctor Strange.
Well, you could actually say Doctor Strange is basically him.
True. Or, no, like, the... Well, he's... Let's put it this way. Mandrake could be Doctor Strange, but he's definitely Zatara.
Good, well put.
But yeah, no, that would make open it up. First of all, are we going to have a Lothar, and would he be called the personal assistant in the show?
Lothar would be his
non-hetero life mate?
I would say more like his companion, his friend, his maybe officially his chauffeur,
bodyguard, something like that.
Yeah,
actually, the bodyguard thing would work if you go with the Vegas angle.
I like it.
Yeah, no, that. Sorry, give me. The 10th Doctor, David Tennant.
Yes.
And the whole reason I bring up Tennant is the Fright Night remake, where he plays Peter Vincent as this Vegas magician / vampire hunter. It's just, that could work. Who would you cast as Lothar, though? And just give me a second. I am going to look up the actress to talk amongst yourselves.
What's his name? Bing Rames.
That could be cool. I'm just going to see if I can find an actual picture of the actor I'm talking about here. Have you guys ever seen the series First Wave?
No.
Okay, here, I'll just put the link in the description. There's a picture of him on his IMDb page. I think Roger Cross is a noted character actor. He's done a lot of sci-fi TV shows.
He's good, but he's no Ving Rhames.
Yeah, but again, Ving Rhames is getting a little old. Just saying. But no, that's, you know, Mandrake, that would be a lot of cool. And Now, would you do it again? Would you bring in the elements of him actually having Mystic's powers, or would you just go with him being like just a stage magician, like Bill Bixby's the magician?
I would actually show that you know, he has Mystic powers, but he tries to keep it a secret. He tries to do things subtly.
You downplay it.
Yeah, and I that's how I would do it. And I would also, like I said, I would have it to where he puts on an act of, you know, I'm just a humble stage magician, but and the truth is he is this conduit to all of these awesome mystical powers and stuff.
Now, there's one thing I would ask. Would he ever run into a couple old friends, you know, Mr. Gordon or Kit Walker?
As much as I would love to do that, and I really would love to do that, I think that is the kind of thing that kills shows like Birds of Prey, Arrow, Smallville, etc., is when you start doing that, you start bringing in the questions of, oh, when are they going to bring in their interpretation of blank? And that takes the focus off of the star. Because when Smallville started doing that Justice bullshit, oh my god, did they kill that show and let that corpse linger too long.
In the sun.
It's
well, because, jackals feasted on it.
Because that's the thing is, and the thing is, they sort of teased it because they had like newspaper clippings that mentioned Themyscira and an ambassador and stuff like that. It's like, and people were wondering, you know, on the internet, oh my goodness, does that mean we're going to see a Wonder Woman on? And we didn't, of course, but when a good example of this is Smallville, really, by the time they started doing the Justice bullshit, they became the DC Variety Hour, where it wasn't about Superman, it wasn't about Clark Kent anymore, it was about, oh my goodness, we get to see a live-action CGI Hawkman. Oh my god, he looks like shit.
They even had Isis.
And
though, admittedly, the costume looked really good on Erica Durance, just saying.
True, but like I said, is when you start doing that and you become the Variety Hour versus the title of the show, you lost the plot somewhere. And like I said, that's the thing, is how cool it is to see all the other stuff. But is that what the show's about? No, the show's about who the title character is.
Yeah.
And I still love seeing the bigger universe. I do. I really do. But do it carefully.
Now, here's the question. In executing Mandrake, would you do it as a standard 20-something episode season, or would you go with the smaller 13-episode order from a lot of cable channels?
I'll do the 13-episode order.
So just so you really have that tightly focused writing and all that?
Yes.
Okay. No, what do you think?
Because the thing is, I think if done right, this could be the show that The Cape tried to be.
Oh, don't even get me started on how much.
It was.
I wanted that show to work so bad.
Not even Keith David could save that show. And Keith David.
Not even the power of Spawn and Goliath of Gargoyles could save that show.
And Keith David has done a lot for us, including saving us from an alien invasion. Twice.
Yeah. And then almost betrayed.
Both times with help from
Roddy Piper.
Yes.
Even after he attempted to betray us to said invaders, and he's wisely the only one that chose not to partake of the president in that one option whenever you talk to somebody. I still haven't done the Johnny Gat. I just, no, not going to happen.
Anyways, let's move on to JT's list.
I think we haven't heard much from Red. I want to hear what Red has first.
What do I have? Well, for one thing, I've had an idea since I was a kid, since Sabrina was on TV, and that was Archie.
Not Josie?
Not Josie, no.
Now, are we talking animated or live action, Red?
Live action.
Okay.
I would take a more realistic view at Archie, for one thing. It wouldn't just be, oh, I want Betty or Veronica. Or where he's dying, and I love you both. Nothing like that. It would basically be just a teen drama.
So
I wouldn't want it
to Degrassi.
Depends on which Degrassi, because One of them's really good, and one of them's clone of 90210.
So,
ooh, what you
Degrassi Junior High.
Pretty much. I'd do something like that, where just a teen-friendly drama with Archie and the gang.
And humor, I would imagine.
Of course, humor. That would be the biggest part of it. And instead of pining over Veronica or Betty, he actually dates them and shit like that. Breaks up with them and goes back with them. One day he makes his choice.
So, yeah, basically the real world. Because, I mean, if you took the basic concept of him going on dates with Betty and Veronica and Betty and Veronica, like, that would not work in the real world.
No.
If we're on a break.
Okay. Now, in your show, would you go with the... as far as the teachers go, would you go with a comically over-the-top interpretation of Svensson and Ms. Beasley, or would you kind of downplay that?
I would downplay it. I would make Miss Grundy.
I was thinking about the crusty lunch lady in the cafeteria.
Yeah. No, I would probably make them a running gag.
Use sparingly.
What about Mr. Weatherby?
Mr. Weatherby, that is something I would make sure would not be over the top. Because I can already picture it in my mind, some asshole in a fucking bald cap making a fool of himself. No, I don't want to see...
Gruff but fair sort of Weatherby?
Yeah. Okay. Gruff like fair, kind of like...
Mr. Belding?
Not Mr. Belding. What the fuck's his name? Mr. Feeney. A character like that. Somebody who's around, doesn't poke his nose into shit. But he's around, and he'll help you out if you need it.
Okay. Now, in as much as you're going for real world with this, would Archie still be a klutz?
Yes.
Good. Because if there's one thing we all love about Archie, it's how much of a klutz that ginger is.
Yes, no,
so. Now, okay, so, I mean, in terms of, like, I wouldn't say you make him completely, like, dumb as a sack of hammers, but would Moose still kind of be a little slow, like how he is in the comics, you know? More of a musclehead, that sort of thing?
I'd make him more of a musclehead. I'd make him a normal dude. A little bit of... Just a little slow, not dumb of a sack of hammers. And
but yeah, so a real world.
I'd make him like... Kind of like a friend of mine when I went to high school.
Okay.
Basically, the cool jock. The guy who didn't give a shit about hanging around with the fucking nerds.
This reminds me of a story I have to tell you guys.
Okay.
Let me tell this story, though.
Okay.
This is a story I'm telling secondhand from a teacher I had in high school. When my teacher himself was in high school, they had a teacher that did an issue of Playboy. And my teacher knew this because his uncle collected the issues. So he one day snuck it out of his uncle's garage, brought it to school. And so they flipped through it, and, you know, him and his friends were all laughing, you know, like, oh, my God, it is her. And what happened was the teacher showed up, and they were like, shush, shush, we got to hide it. And there was this one student who always slept in class. He was, like, the big, dumb jock. So, like, okay, we'll just slip it under his arm while he's sleeping, and no one will know. So that's what they did. And... this was, like, the only day that this guy, this jock, woke up. So he woke up, he saw what was under his arm. Saw the picture, and he raised his hand, he says, Miss, is this you?
I'm sorry. You sit tell this story, and the first thing that pops into my head is that one line from Varsity Blues. Miss Davis, you go to the prom with me? Oh. Now, just back to the Archie for a sec before we move on to your next one, Red. Would Moosen have the anger control issues that we all know and love him for, in some respect?
In some respect, he would. I'd say Reggie would be a fucking asshole as normal and get under his skin, basically.
Okay.
Like, you wouldn't just fucking, ooh, you're dating me, or you looked at Midge, I'm going to beat you up. Nothing
but
he'd
you'd have that kind of sort of possessive, over-protective sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just because I read Archie comics have always been near and dear to my heart. Like, I don't read them a lot anymore, but it's just, you really got to try hard to screw up certain characters in Archie, like where they made Jughead a skater punk for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, would Jughead wear that hat?
Where he changed his hat and he got like the steps shaved into his hair, and he had this. They tried to give him like a new supporting cast, like a sassy Thrasher, who's like this platinum blonde skateboarder, and a best friend who was like a blind guy with a guide dog and stuff like that. But and I think it doesn't go too far without saying that Archie would more than likely be on the CW if it did get made now.
Yeah. So
if I had Jughead on there, I would make him a stoner. I'd make him like fucking Jay from Kevin Smith's movies.
What's your next series, Brad?
My next series would be Doctor Strange.
Ah.
This would be a live action series too.
Excellent.
And it'd kind of be an ultimate take on Doctor Strange. It wouldn't be based on the regular.
So it'd be like he's a self-help guru kind of TV
show? No.
Aw.
No.
Would he be a surgeon who inherited his father's potential as Sorcerer Supreme and has to fight against the machinations of Morgan Le Fay?
I wouldn't say surgeon, but he would probably inherit his father's potential. Yeah.
Well, you know I was talking about the 70s movie, right?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
The idea I had would be kind of like Doctor Who meets Supernatural kind of thing.
Doctor Natural.
Something like that, yeah. Like, if you ever watch Doctor Who, do you guys watch Doctor Who?
No.
Dude, I've been watching Doctor Who since I was 12.
Okay.
I've never seen the show.
Then you know the Doctor basically has everything under control during every fucking episode. You know for a fact that he's overpowered, he knows everything, and he's going to solve the fucking he's going to save the day at the end. You watch every episode knowing this. Maybe in the back of your mind you have, maybe he's going to fail. But the truth is, that's the way it is.
I don't know, that feels more like modern Who, because the thing is, you know, the Tom Baker Who didn't really feel like that for me. It was more about the backdrop than the adventure.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, too. With Doctor Strange, if you've read classic Doctor Strange, he's overpowered. He's fucking... He can snap his fingers and stop all the time. He doesn't speed himself up so everybody looks like they're stopped in time. No, he actually stops time for the entire fucking universe. He's the most powerful dude ever.
Yep.
So basically, I wouldn't have him at that kind of power level, but I would have him where, you know, this guy's going to save the day at the end, kind of like the Doctor. And he's the main character, but he's not the integral part of the story. It's whatever adventure he's on is what's important.
It's the backdrop, not the...
Yeah.
I get it.
That's what it would be about. That's how I'd handle it. And I'd make it sort of a modern take on it, because classic Doctor Strange was made for 60s timeline, for the 60s timeline. You had all these groovy fucking things happening, all these strange shit. Well, I would make a modern take where today people are basically worried about conspiracy theories, and they're worried about the Illuminati, shit like that. They're worried about Eldritch Horrors from fucking Lovecraft shit.
So there wouldn't be a lot of, like, the, you know, by the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, that sort of magic?
Not so much, no.
Okay.
It basically, a guy who's the guardian of fucking the reality, just like regular, and it's been plopped in his fucking, in his lap, and he's got to take care of shit.
Okay.
Interesting. So, that'd be an interesting take. So, I think that would actually work, you know, if done right, it could be like the next big adventure series, if done right. The sad thing is, American television hasn't really had a good adventure series take off. Every time they try to do one, it turns out like Heroes.
True. No, and I mean, you could certainly, I mean, in this setup, you could certainly have Dormammu as a, like, this omnipresent threat, but like you said, you have a more elder god, you know, Cthulhu-like kind of, what do you call it, omnipresent sort of evil.
Yeah, something like that. Like, my idea for Dormammu, it would be, he fucking, I think it's one of his classic origins, I'm not sure, but he actually ate all the magic in his reality, and he became a god from it.
On the dark dimension, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's something like that.
Yeah. Well, my vision of Dormammu would be, he is that other dimension. He basically merged with it, took it over, and that's what he is.
He is God.
Yeah, and basically, whenever he crosses over, that's him looking our way. That's not him coming into our dimension. That's just him looking over his shoulder, basically. You can stop him, you can stop this fucking avatar Dormammu, but you cannot stop Dormammu himself, kind of deal.
Which would definitely work for the whole Elder God aspect. No, then.
Yeah.
Now, would Doctor Strange be assisted by Wong in this, or would you just kind of do away with the character?
I'd keep Wong in, but I might. This is my personal opinion, because I could see a lot of people against it. I would take the Kevin Smith route. Kevin Smith Green Hornet route with Wong.
Chick? And
make it a hot chick, yeah.
All right. So is that kind of like your way of merging Wong and Clea, or?
No, I'd have Clea in there, too.
Okay.
Well, my vision, the way I'd have Wong would be kind of like a sister. Somebody who's not attracted to him at all, but always his best bud, his best bro, the person he can count on.
So, like, the faithful retainer and all that, but, you know, like, she's still, like, Wong would still be an assistant to Doctor Strange. It just, because she's a woman, they would never have that. There's no will they, won't they.
No, that's okay. What I have.
Would you, okay, and this is just me, because, like, I'm a big fan of the Ditko Strange. Would you have the Sanctum Sanctorum in some function, or would that just be another one of those kind of, you don't mention it all that often, or, like, I guess what I mean to ask, would it be, like, a physical presence, or it's just something that they go to once in a while, or would that actually be something that you see in an episode that they spend time there?
I'd have it in there for sure.
Okay.
And I'd handle it just like the TARDIS. Basically, you walk in a door, you're there.
Yep.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's any door.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have the Brownstone Mansion in Greenwich.
No, that's still there too, but he can use any door to get there. That's just, that also happens to be his house as well.
Okay, and would he also have the Eye of Agamotto?
Yeah.
Of course. Okay.
Well, I just...
Well, I would take different takes to the Eye of Agamotto.
That's what I'm asking. Like, how would you do the Eye of Agamotto in your series?
Well, my series, like I said, it would be based on Ultimate Doctor Strange, where he's the son of the first Doctor Strange.
Okay, yeah.
So, basically, he's got to protect the Wand of Atum, the Eye of Agamotto, the fucking...
The Orb of the Vishanti.
Yeah, and the cloak of invisibility and shit. And he hides them on his presence. Like, he basically, the Eye of Agamotto is his fucking eye. You don't reveal that until late in the series or something. Then Wando Atum is one of his bones. Shit like that.
But okay.
He's always kept it on his presence. And the cloak of invisibility, well, it's invisible. So you don't have to spend a bunch of CGI every fucking episode to have this big thing billowing all over him.
You don't want to go spawn with it, basically.
Yeah.
Because, and just as a side quick, that's one of the things I liked when they did what they did with Doctor Strange post the whole Midnight Suns wave that they did, where he had gone off to fight this war with the Vishanti, and he's gone for like 1,000 years, but he comes back like 6 weeks later.
Yeah, it's
they kind of, and how they changed the cloak of levitation, so it was like this. You know, the trim of this trench coat is like what remains. So, you know, it wasn't just the cape with like the pimp collar and all that. No, that could work.
Well, I'd have it that it's still the cape with the pimp collar. It's still the big billowing thing that moves on its own and shit like that. But it's invisible when he wears it. So he can wear regular clothes. You just can't see the cape.
Just kind of phased out of reality somewhat. No, that... I watch the hell out of this show. So, what do you got next for us?
Well, my next one We did Nightwing, so the other one would be the new X-Men. This would be an animated series based on the new X-Men series where they had the Academy.
Oh, Academy X.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where you had the next generation of the X-Men basically being trained and learning how to use their powers and shit. It's a series I dug and I really loved. And I'd love to see that animated.
Now, with the team, are you doing like the actual school aspect where they got like the different squads, or you just have like this one new group of new X-Men?
I would go different squads. I'd go full-on Harry Potter with this fucker. Just like the new X-Men Academy X series went.
Yeah, so they had Hellion and the Hellions. There was some brilliant writing for you. And you had like the New Mutants and the Corsairs. Because again, I like you, I love this series. It's something that's a series that kind of got me back into X-Men, because I hadn't read it for quite a few years before. I think the last time I read X-Men is when they did like Apocalypse the 12.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get back into it until New X-Men. Now, certainly other, like the elder statesmen X-Men, they flow in and out. Are there any of the mainstay X-Men that would be a constant presence, or is it just that it's more focused on the kids?
Well, I don't know any other way to say this. Each of the teams had a main teacher. Basically, just like Gryffindor had its own fucking teacher and all that shit.
Yeah, the heads of the house and all that.
Yeah, well, those would be the constant presence from the older X-Men. You'd have, like, the White Queen leading the Hellions. You'd have,
fucking... Zorn leading the special class.
Yeah.
It's you'd not have, Zorn.
Daniel Moonstar leading the New Mutants.
Yeah.
Shit like that.
Yeah, and they had, Oh, I know in the comic book, Rain, who is like the mentally scarred Irish werewolf chick, and then when they brought her back in here, she's like this badass on a bike and kind of dealt with her shit, so I forget what her team was called. I know she was one of the mentors, so.
I'd stick Wolverine in her place.
Yeah. But you could get like a hot Irish chick. And come on, the Irish accent's pretty damn sexy. I don't think anyone can disagree with that, so.
I'd rather go with Siren than.
Well, Siren works too, you know.
What's your last series, Red, or is that it?
My last series would be an animated Invincible series.
Excellent.
Now, would you tone down the violence that has shown up in the comic of late, or would you build towards that?
Out of the rape?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go with the rape, no.
The crater making violence.
Rape? I'd have violence. It wouldn't be as gory as Ryan Otley's artwork, though.
Okay.
I'd want it to be an HBO show or an Adult Showtime. Swim show. Okay. Over.
You'd probably get it on Adult Swim.
Yeah. And I just want it to be a mature cartoon for older comic book fans.
That would be cool. Because what's the name of the bad guy that's got the giant overgrown brain? Angstrom Levy, just looking it up here. Again, just based on costuming and special effects needed for some of these characters, this would be, if he did it live action, it would be awesome. But again, to see some of the designs, if you take some of the inspiration from some of Ryan Otley's designs, because one of the reasons that I was into Invincible, or still am, is the fact that he's got this almost Silver Age sense to a lot of his design work when it comes to costumes. Like, it's very dynamic and energetic, but it's not 90s overly designed sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, no, that could actually work. Now, any idea who you would have to voice Invincible?
Neil Patrick Harris?
No, that'd be Spider-Man. I would have what is his name? Batman Beyond, Will Friedle.
Ah, yeah, and then this is just my suggestion. If you could go like this for Invincible, and then for his dad, Omni-Man, you get Tim Daly to voice Omni-Man, and you get Nolan North to do Invincible. Because Nolan North was one of my favorite things about Young Justice. Like, I loved his work on Superboy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be Nolan?
I would get Tim Daly to do Omni-Man, but I'm not 100% sure of Nolan North.
Yeah. Any, or have you, in your head, have you voice cast any of the other characters in the show?
Not in my head so much.
Yeah.
What about Adam Eve?
Adam Eve, I would get, I can't think of anybody who would suit her, to be honest. Do you have any ideas?
I can't remember the actress's name. You get Winnie Cooper, who did Miss Martian, as Adam Eve.
The Megan.
And
I hated that. Three episodes in.
Hello, Megan.
Yeah, that did get over quickly.
The only thing that they wrote that was actually worth a meme was the whole whelm thing, but.
Or Robin's obsession with the opposites of certain words, which actually played in the fourth episode. Was it Drop Zone, where they're fighting Bane and the forces of Cobra on Santa Prisca, and Arnor Vosloo as Cobra was awesome, and he's like, "What's the matter, boy? You look disconcerted." And then Robin's like, "Well, you better get, I'll get really..." Just that whole wordplay that they gave Robin to work with was awesome. You know, one guy I would, you get Jason Marsden as Rexplode.
That'd be cool, yeah.
You know?
Then you'd have to voice Robot, too, though.
Well, down the line. But, I don't know. Yeah, it's like there's so many characters we could voice or get voices for in here. So,
that's
right. So anything else you'd do different with the show, or would you just go for like a really honest translation here?
I'd do a few things different.
What would you do different?
The reign of the Invincibles, or where he has to fight a whole army of Invincibles. I didn't like that idea at all.
Just not do that?
Yeah.
What about the whole, the Viltrumites being like these intergalactic despot conquerors?
I like that.
That's not too bad.
You just wouldn't have the crater making rape.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be back for more.
Yeah, that's right. that's honestly that and that one issue with the tarantula and Nightwing, just kind of like, yeah.
And rape.
Yeah.
There's no need for that. All right, so, let's move on to JT.
All right.
Okay, so I'm going to do... My first two shows are going to be the animated series, because I really want to get... Not out of the way bad, just... I really want to talk about these. Is the first animated series I would do is based on The Amazing Joy Buzzards. Mm. What if Blink 182 was also Mystery Incorporated? Is the best way to describe this series. It's...
South Park did it.
Yeah, but... This would probably be better. Because The Amazing Joy Buzzards, there's Biff, Gabe, and Steve-O. There's this three-man act band. They're like the biggest band in the world. Biff, who's the lead singer, has the... It's not necessarily a superpower. It's just he basically can get any woman he wants. Which, him being a rock star, it's not all that surprising. And it's been in like two or three different miniseries, and... They travel all over the world having all sorts of, you know, weird Scooby-Doo-style mystery adventures. They're aided by a Mexican wrestling luchador genie named El Campeon, who's obsessed with burritos, and he can be summoned from a magic amulet to, you know, kick ass. And the boys are watched over by this character named Dalton Warner of the Creative International Agency, which is essentially a front for him... He's an agent for the CIA, and he uses the band's superstar status to get him all over the world where he needs to go, which invariably leads into the band getting involved in some sort of shenanigans. And I think if you did this, it would definitely be in an Adult Swim cartoon. I would try and... The art in the comics is very... It's got aspects. It's kind of got like a graffiti style almost, just in... Not everything's properly proportioned. It's got this texture to it that I would love. If they could kind of do what they did with Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, and try and translate the art into animation, I would definitely go with that.
Public Enemies.
Yeah, I know. You shine a turd, it's still a turd. Let it go, Ben.
Never.
But yeah, I would definitely do this, and I would do this only in... I know some animated series do, like, either do 13 or 26 episode seasons. I would do this exclusively 13 episode seasons. And maybe do, like, you know, five or six two-part stories, and then have, like, a bigger three-part story at the end of the season. Mm. And, I mean, they've got, a cast of characters that pal around with them. I mean, there's Professor Yu and his daughter Betty, who live inside Mount Rushmore, which is the Joy Buzzard's secret home away from home. Professor Yu is basically the Q of the Joy Buzzard's universe. He creates all these kooky gadgets that the band uses in their adventures. Dalton, their manager, is essentially patterned after Timothy Dalton's James Bond. You know, he drives around in a Shelby Cobra. He's got the pencil thin mustache. He's the man's man. They got villains like Hypno, who's a Hollywood agent with hypnotic powers. They fight against killer vampire robots. There's El Campeon's even got some of his own villains in the series. Is El Chicos Muerte and El Chavo, who are these rivals. I just think if you like stuff like Scooby-Doo and you like, you know, rock and pop rock stuff like that, this would be something, a little something for everybody. Mm. And I think it's like I mentioned off air, this is one title that I don't really have an alternate pitch for. This is just something I think the story in and of itself would translate to animation very well. So, I don't know, what do you guys, what do you think? Or have you ever...
It really does remind me of the South Park episode where they had Corn show up as Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. I don't doubt that, deny that.
Would you make it campy like Scooby-Doo?
Well, the stories in and of themselves are kind of campy. I mean, there's one in the first miniseries where they're performing at a show and one of their villains, the puppeteer, is like this little midget supervillain guy. You know, he wants to take over the world, and he hates the Joy Buzzards for all the times before they've mucked with his things. And what they do in this one one adventure is they're performing in Tokyo, and the puppeteer poisons Gabe, who is the drummer of the band, puts this potion in his water that he's drinking while performing on stage, and he mutates into this giant Godzillian-sized, like, lizard Gabe thing. And carnage and wacky hijinks ensue. And there's one where they team up with Professor Yu and his daughter Betty, and they go to explore this Aztec pyramid, and they end up fighting these killer vampire robots who have been disguised as mummies, and they accidentally awake this elder or Aztec elder god who basically asks, like, with this aloof punk rocker, you know, wears a lot of leather, oh, no one understands my pain, that sort of thing. So I would, if they didn't crank it up enough, I would definitely have them crank up the goofy more in the show, like get the camp going, because this is something that I think would definitely work in that aspect.
I see.
So, and if we go on from there to this comic, second comic I chose to make an animated series. Now, who amongst us has not read Scud the Disposable Assassin, I ask you?
I haven't.
Okay, so the basic plot of Scud, it's set in the future where you can walk up to a vending machine and buy a robot assassin. Like, you put in, like, $5, you feed it a picture of the person you want whacked, and the robot goes off, kills the target, and then self-terminates. Now, and they're all called Scud, although he takes that as his name eventually. In the performance of one mission where Scud is going after Jeff, and Jeff is this piecemeal monster. It's got an electrical plug for a head, mouse traps for hands, and a mouth on each knee. And it's also a female. Scud goes to kill Jeff, and he sees in the mirror the warning label strapped to his back, warning Scud will self-terminate once objective achieved. So Scud basically smacks Jeff up so bad it puts her into a coma, and then he goes off to become like this freelance hitman bounty hunter, just so he can pay the hospital bills to keep Jeff in this medically induced coma so she doesn't die. Because as soon as she dies, Scud will die. And it's just a lot of, like, the he ends up fighting Voodoo Bren Franklin later on in the series, who is a zombie Ben Franklin who wants to take over organized crime and then later rule the world with all the powers of hell.
Interesting. Yes.
And this is one I would definitely keep the, if I were to change anything in the story, I would keep the whole Scud is, like, you know, Scud wounds Jeff so bad and Jeff goes into a coma, and then I would change it so Scud, because Jeff does wake up eventually in the comics, but I would have it that Jeff wakes up a lot sooner, and it would become a running gag where she tries to take out Scud and then hilariously comically fails every time. Like, in a lot of cards, it's like where Tom tries to take out Jerry and then, well, not Tom, more like the Wile E. Coyote where, you know, he's going to ride the rocket and then the rocket takes off without him. You know, that sort of thing where all the gags happen and then Scud turns and goes, what was that? You know, sort of like that where he misses that, but you just see the setup where Jeff tries to do in Scud and it just always fails.
I see.
And if I were to voice cast
Nolan North,
I would get Nolan North to do Jeff. I would like to get Steve Zahn as Scud. Now, does anyone remember Steve Zahn?
Crickets.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Sahara? Matthew McConaughey was based off the Dirk Pitt novels.
Crickets.
Okay, I know Steve Zahn.
I would totally. Yeah. I would have him as Scud. Alternatively, if I didn't have him as Scud, I would totally get NPH to voice Scud, because that would be glorious.
Lasers. He's got lasers.
Could you just say get in the car just one time? So, I mean, and really, it's kind of hard to, it would take me forever to properly discuss a lot of the stories in Scud, but I'm just saying, I think the concept like that, you could do it as a very Adult Swim cartoon, you know, have a lot of fun with that, just wacky hijinks ensue. Now, I got three shows for live action. The first one, if either of you read, and it's a currently ongoing comic called Ghosted.
No.
Okay. Ghosted, the best way to describe this is the X-Files by way of, or not the X-Files, Ocean's 11 by way of The Exorcist. Mm. Now, originally it was supposed to be a miniseries and has since been upgraded to an ongoing, and I just got it in trade, so I haven't read the second volume yet. But the basic plot, and this could be, you know, say if you do third, this would definitely be something on HBO or Showtime to take advantage of the fact that you could get some really nice gory effects going on. This could be like the first half of a 13-episode season. You know, just because you could easily split the comics in, or the series in half or two separate arcs like this. But the basic idea is there's this guy, Jackson Winter. He is in prison for a botched heist at a casino some years before. He is broken out by this blonde Valkyrie bitch, pardon my expression, who works for this extremely wealthy man. And I'm not just talking this guy's Donald Trump. This guy has got more money than since, and he basically said, damn it all to hell and the torpedoes. This guy wants Jackson to put together a team, go into one of the most haunted houses in America, steal and bring back to him an actual ghost. So Jackson puts together this team involving a professional, what do you call it, not cynic, like the guys that go around disproving magic tricks and such like that. There's
skeptic.
That's it, a professional skeptic, a couple of guys who do their own like ghost hunters show, this old guy who's like a con artist and a medium of some sort, and this one girl who her only thing is like she's like a psychic and she can actually talk to ghosts. She's another medium, and they go into this house and it don't end well, is the proper way to put it. I mean, they basically have to go in and get out before sundown. Of course, that doesn't happen. And there's some scenes where Trick, who's the old man con artist, goes into a room and he goes in, he closes the door, he turns around, and he's in, like, one of the scenes from a Steve Ditko Doctor Strange comic book. And he blinks, and he's in a normal room. And then he gets possessed by a ghost who tells them, you know, not everything is what it seems, and the guy employing you isn't exactly being honest about what's going on. And it's just one. It's just the idea of, like I said, it's Ocean's 11 meets The Exorcist. And the second arc in the comic, from what I've read, is Jackson, after the events of this first story, he gets wrapped up in this cult who is behind a sex traffic ring where they provide, again, people with more money than any goddamn sense, like these uber rich guys, provides them with some female companionship. But it's the freakiest sex these guys will ever have because every woman is possessed by a spirit. So it's what if Reagan from The Exorcist was legal and she had a pimp who also sells knockoff copies of the Necronomicon to these guys as well.
I see. A little strange, but okay.
I'm just saying, because you look at stuff like, you know, American Horror Story and stuff like Supernatural, there is a market for something like that. And I think, like I said, the concept of, you know, a crew of people trying to steal a ghost, and then it only gets worse and or even more worse from there. Now, I haven't thought of casting. Now, if you were thinking of some guy who's like Danny Ocean, but even more of an asshole, who would you cast for that?
That's a good question.
Nolan North?
Your answer for everything going to be Nolan North, Red? And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just asking.
No, that would be Ben's answer for everything.
Ben, would that be your answer for everything?
No. I don't know who I'd cast for this. The guy who plays Jim in The Office.
I could see that. I know if you're going with Trick, the one guy that kind of sprang to mind is you get Jeff Fahey. Mm. You know, character actor, been in a lot of stuff from the 80s on to now. I think you see him now, like, with the old grizzled old guy look, like he was the guy that hires Danny Trejo and Machete. I could see him playing Trick. I think that would work really good. I would almost want to get Jonathan Pryce to voice the more money than sense billionaire that hires Jackson for this. Ooh. I think that would be really interesting. But and what do you think, Red?
Well, I'm still trying to think of somebody who could be Danny Ocean, more of a prick.
David Duchovny?
Not really. Duchovny has a limit on his way.
Yeah.
His charisma.
He has charisma?
He has some, but he can only go so far with it.
Yeah, he was a hand model.
What about, depends on how old you want to go.
Well, they've never actually said how old Jackson is in the comic, at least in that first issue. Like, I imagine mid-30s to maybe 40, so something like that, or even somewhere in his 30s anyhow. Who do you have in mind?
What about Alec Baldwin?
No, you know, you're not going big enough. Shatner. Denny Crane.
James Spader. Because he can play a glorious prick. I'll have to come back to this at some point. But I just think the series of, like, these group of people trying to steal a ghost and just whatever happens off in the comic, just that idea, even if it's just a miniseries, if you did that first arc as a miniseries, I think this would be great.
Honestly, from what you pitched so far, it's something I would watch. Yeah. I would check out. I'd give a chance for sure. Yeah.
And definitely, if you can get the comic, get it, because how they end the first story arc and everything, it's just so, it's such a nice payoff. So the second live action series that I came up, that I would like to cast is, it would be on the CW for certain. Because this is one of the first comic series I ever collected front to back, everything that came out. I even have the crossover with Young Justice, and that is Peter David's Spy Boy. Now, are either of you familiar with this title?
I used to be, but I have not read it in a very, very long time.
And what about you, Ben?
I'm sad to say no.
Okay. So the basic story is there is this boy, Alex Fleming, who, if you look up the history on the comic, he's actually named in honor of Ian Fleming. Alex Fleming is this boy. He's bullied in high school. He's this average kid. You know, he's got friends. He likes certain types of music. But it turns out that his whole life is basically a carefully constructed lie, and he's a sleeper agent that was constructed by an evil organization called SKINS, an acronym for the Supreme Killing Institute, who fought against another secret but good organization called SHIRTS, which stood for Secret Headquarters International Reconnaissance Tactics and Spies. Mm. So yes, it is SHIRTS versus SKINS. Ba-dum-boom. But the backstory is that Alex's dad was a former agent for SHIRTS who got burnt out, left the organization, was hired by SKINS unknowingly, and worked towards creating this, a natural grown spy sleeper agent. But, you know, he had a change of heart. He and his dad, who's essentially patterned after Sean Connery, steal the kid and escape and go into hiding, trying to raise the boy as normal as possible. But one day, he's fat. Spy Boy is woken up, which is the sleeper agent persona, where a certain frequency of flashing lights will unlock this persona in Alex. And he goes off and he makes contact with SKINS. I haven't read this in forever, but I got most of it from memory. But just the idea of this kid that wakes up one day and finds out he's a normal kid, but he wakes up and he discovers he's got, like, the world's biggest badass living inside of him. I wouldn't necessarily, and I would go with that basic plot for the series. I wouldn't necessarily use much of the storyline that Peter David did, just because, you know, you would want to maybe stretch this out 3 or 4 seasons, you know, have a good run in the show. But I would definitely have, like, the fact that it's revealed that Alex's mom is the evil head of SKINS. And I would definitely bring in Spy Girl, who is a spy in Japan. She's a, you know, I don't even know the proper name. She's like a Japanese comedian, you know, does a lot of the cutesy wink-wink sort of stuff over there. Mm-hmm. But she uses this as her way to get into places where a normal agent might not be able to. And, you know, she teams up with Spy Boy on several occasions, and Spy Boy doesn't necessarily like his alter ego, and it had this, and something I think Peter David brought from his time on Hulk was the whole Spy Boy hates Alex and Alex isn't all that fond of Spy Boy because of all the shenanigans they get into. I just think this is something, if they downplay like the hardcore violence of the show, they could really have something with, like, work with something like this.
I think they got something here. At the same time, it does remind me of the little bit of, you know, the pitch with that of the Tomorrow People series that they're trying to pitch. Not much, but a little bit.
Well, yeah, just how he has to balance both lives and something like that. I could see this working either as an animated series. I would more definitely like to see it as a live action, because, like you're saying, there hasn't been any really good action adventure series in years. I mean, it's the syndicated market really isn't there anymore, and that's where you used to find a lot of, everyone's definition of good is different, but it's just the syndicated market gave rise to, like, a glut of syndicated action adventure programs in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's somewhere you think something like this would really work well. But if it was made today, it would more than likely be in the CW, because you want to get that teenage, college-age market like that. If you look at some of the, you look at the show like Arrow and, like, the fight choreography and such like that, you know, a comic book-style TV show is not only possible, it can be done well. And you do want to cast the hot young unknowns or maybe a couple of knowns. Just, you know, it's possible. And it's just something like this, I don't know why people haven't done it.
It's risky.
Yeah. And the thing is, I can't really think of any youngish actors off the top of my head that you could cast as, like, Alex or Spy Girl. There's also, he has this, like, partner, it's called, like, Boom Boom or something like that. She's basically an young explosive expert. Hmm. Now, the final show I came up with is something that, if you use the context of the, it is only ever one miniseries I read, I have it hardcover, or not hardcover, I have it in trade and single issue, was a 2002 era miniseries from Top Cow Comics called No Honor. And the basic story of this is there's this, one of the greatest thieves in the world, Random. He breaks into like the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art to steal this samurai sword. Not because he's getting paid for it or anything. He just wants to get something nice and shiny to impress his latest squeeze. And in the midst of the robbery, he has an accident. He cuts himself with the sword. Now, the act of cutting himself with the sword, basically what happens is he is now possessed by the spirit of the sword's former owner, this samurai, who was killed, like he was back in the days of feudal Japan. He was betrayed by some of his friends, you know, the shogun daimyo or whatever that he worked for was killed. He was killed with his own sword, and his spirit has been trapped in this blade for like a couple hundred years. And whenever Random falls asleep, the samurai can wake up, and he can control his body. And some wacky hijinks ensue over the course of the miniseries, but basically the story is the samurai and Random want to go their separate ways. You know, samurai wants to go on to his reward, Random wants to get back to his life. So what happens is they go on this kind of quest to go back to the spot in Japan where, you know, the samurai was killed, and they come across this guy who is possessed by the best friend who killed the samurai. And they think that's it, because, you know, once the samurai has his revenge, he can go on. It turns out the samurai is still there, and it ends with basically the samurai choosing to, we'll figure this out, and I will take you on as my apprentice and teach you to be a better man. Because when he finds out that Random, you know, he notices your fingers are very skilled, and are you an inventor? He's like, I've been known to invent things. And the samurai doesn't like Random initially because he's a thief. You have no honor, he specifically says. So I would, over the course of even the first season, it doesn't have to immediately be that they go to Japan to fix this. It's, you could build up a mythology of, you know, the samurai's blade was maybe, you know, handed down from father to son. You know, it's got some sort of inherent mystic qualities, which would be how Random is possessed by him. And they go around New York, and it's kind of like a series out of the 80s where he's just constantly runs into people that need help, and specifically the sort of trouble that Random would be able to help them with. And, you know, and it goes towards, you know, the samurai trying to rehabilitate Random. And in the comic book, there was also this disgraced New York City detective who is basically trying to pin Random, suspected of being the thief, but it's never been proven in court. So she's basically got this vendetta against Random, and you can certainly build that up. And
it sounds a little bit like Due South.
Not if you go, I guess you could say that it's somewhat inspired by that aspect. But I mean, the mini series in and of itself was so popular back in 2002. Like, there was supposed to be a sequel series, never happened. There was actually steps towards making this into an actual show on Showtime. Didn't happen. But I think if you take the miniseries just as the first season and you end it with them going to Japan and, you know, satisfying the samurai's honor, but no, they're still stuck together, and then you can build from there. I just think you could stretch it out for the season where they find clues, and you could develop some sort of mythology with other people who are possessed by the spirits of, you know, certain items. You know, you work a little Warehouse 13 in there.
I see.
Like that. So, what do you think?
Could work. A little risky.
Now, anybody in mind? Because I honestly racked my brain. I haven't been able to come up with this. Who would you cast as a young, late 20s, early 30s something actor for Random? Got to be good with the snark. Got to be physically capable.
No one knows.
I think that's going to be your answer for everything, Red. I mean, there's a recurring character in the miniseries, shows up in, I think, pretty much every issue, is this wise old Japanese man who can see ghosts, and basically he's the Yoda of the series. And I know he's passed years. You've been years now that he's passed, but I would so cast Mako.
As of course you would, yes.
Well, why not?
He's dead, though.
I know. I'm just saying that I know he's passed, but if he was still alive, I would so cast Mako as the Yoda of this series. And when I think of... if I could do the samurai, I would get Ian Anthony Dale. Now, does that name sound familiar to you guys at all?
No.
Have either of you guys watched Hawaii Five-O or seen Mortal Kombat Legacy?
No.
Red?
No.
Okay. If you ever get a chance to watch Mortal Kombat... actually, look up Mortal Kombat Rebirth. It's like a 5 or 7 minute or something like that. It's a short little fan film that is made by this director. I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. His first name's Kevin. This director, Kevin, he made it as a proof of concept video because he is a huge Mortal Kombat fan, and he cast Ian Anthony Dale as Scorpion in Rebirth and the web series Mortal Kombat. He's an Asian actor. He's appeared a few times as the character Kono's boyfriend, Adam, on the new Hawaii Five-O. I think he would be great as this samurai character. The one thing I would probably do away with in the series is when the samurai first wakes up and you see the ghostly image of the samurai, and then whenever he Random's asleep and the samurai is in control and walking around in Random's body, you only see the samurai in that aspect, like to keep him separate. He wakes up and for most of the series, he doesn't have any hair. Like, he comes back as a ghost, he comes back bald for some reason. And over the course of the series, the hair grows back. I would do away with that. But and just having Random being able to see other ghosts and then having you know, slowly learn that maybe there's this way to get him out. Like, he has to take him back and satisfy the samurai's honor. I think this series could work. More than anything I've suggested, I think this is the one that could work the most. And would definitely fill that action TV show vibe.
See.
You any suggestions for the show?
Not really. I think this might work.
Cast Shovel Face?
What's that?
I said cast Shovel Face as the main character.
But yeah, no, I definitely think this one. I mean, we've talked about Dynamo 5 before on the show. I would definitely see this as that working too, but I think I would probably go with animation over a live action just for some of the characters in there. It would be a lot easier to do. Mm. And is there any other shows just off the top of the head that you would maybe do?
I think that's all I got.
Okay. I'd go Fables. I'd do an HBO Fables show.
HBO or Showtime, but yeah. That would definitely work. I mean, that would be a lot of fun. I know I spoke about this off air, but I mean, there's another Robert Kirkman comic, Thief of Thieves, about this guy named Alias Redman, greatest thief in the world, and him wanting to get out and constantly being sucked back in. I mean, that in and of itself is a great concept. I would love to see on the show, and they're working on that right now. I would also like to see, have you ever read Global Frequency?
No.
Can't say I have.
Warren Ellis comic in the early aughts, and it's basically about this mysterious former government agent named, the only name you get from her is Miranda Zero, and she's created this civilian search and rescue organization. Basically, it's made up of the tagline is it's made up of 1,001 agents, and you could be one of them. And it's everyone from like astrophysicists to like former spec ops soldiers to retired detectives to some guy who just knows how to hack computer hackers. It's basically everyone has this special phone that if you get the call, you've been activated. They're like sleeper agents without being sleeper agents. And they go in and solve all the problems that the world's governments can't or won't admit exist. And they actually did, you can find it online. I think you might even be able to watch it off of like a bad VHS rip on YouTube. They did shoot a pilot for this in, I think it was like 03 or 04, somewhere around there. Never, went beyond that. It was and never actually aired on TV. It was promoted to be played on the WB, which is the network it was going for. Never actually happened. Then it got leaked online, and currently they're supposed to be trying it again to get like a different interpretation. Lord knows if that'll happen. Overall, and if the show never happens, I highly recommend you can get all, the whole series in one trade paperback. Well worth the money.
Interesting. So. All right. So that's everyone's picks. It's getting a little late here, so let's go ahead and wrap this up. Next week, we'll be having the big episode on costume design and design theories with a fully booked cast. This is your host, Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.